This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is John DeGraff, independent television producer and national coordinator for Take Back Your Time. John produced the PBS specials Affluenza, Running Out of Time, and Silent Killer, the unfinished campaign against hunger. He also co-wrote the book Affluenza, the All-Consuming Epidemic, and is editor of Take Back Your Time, Fighting Overwork and Time Poverty in America. John DeGraff is here today to tell us about his most recent documentary film, titled Buyer Be Fair, The Promise of Product Certification, which was co-produced with Hannah Jendrova. Welcome, John.
Thanks. Good to be here again.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
What led you to choose product certification as the topic for your film?
Well, I often say that I haven't had an original idea in years. People always bring these ideas to me. And in this particular case, some folks had brought the idea to me. Actually, it came from Pyramid Communications, one of the local PR, kind of progressive PR house here in town, to do a piece about certification of timber. The Forest Stewardship Council, it's called, it certifies timber as being sustainably managed. And we put together a little piece about that. And then they talked to me again at Matt Warning, a professor from the University of Puget Sound, was talking with them about doing something on fair trade coffee. And I met Matt Warning, and I found out that, in fact, the center at that time for both the fair trade coffee movement and the sustainable timber movement was the state of Oaxaca in Mexico. And I had this idea, well, why not put these two together and make something longer, a PBS-length documentary about product certification, about how we can impact the marketplace by buying certified products, and look at coffee and wood as two case studies, those being two of the biggest commodities sold on the world market. And the idea came from there, and the idea was then to revolve the show kind of around Oaxaca, which is an exotic and fascinating place in itself. And we got support from the Ford Foundation, and so the rest is the documentary Buyer Be Fair.
What do you hope your film will accomplish?
Well, I hope that the film makes people aware of some of the choices that they do have in the marketplace, particularly to buy fair trade products, and also if they're shopping for wood, to look at things like the Forest Stewardship Council certification that lets people know that that wood has been sustainably harvested from sustainably managed forests and so forth, that workers' needs, community needs, and the environment have been taken care of. So I want people to be more aware of that and to shop with a conscience, if you will.
Let's focus on fair trade coffee. What criteria must be met for fair trade certification for coffee?
Well, the most important criterion for fair trade is actually the price. It's a price that's set somewhat above the market price, which is often very, very low. When fair trade began, the market was very low, so low, in fact, that thousands upon thousands of small farmers were going out of business because it simply cost them more to produce coffee than they could get for it. Coffee prices have gone up somewhat since that time, but the fair trade price is still higher. To be certified for fair trade coffee, the coffee has to be produced by small producers or small cooperatives. It doesn't come from a plantation, for example. The work is done by the coffee producers themselves. There are some other criterion regarding the standards for the community. The community, for example, the cooperative that does the fair trade has to use a certain portion of the fair trade profit, of the extra money, for community things. It doesn't all go back to the individual producers. And that's made a huge difference as the communities use those for all kinds of community building activities.
Could you expand, as documented in your film, on how effective fair trade coffee has been in making the lives of coffee producers and their communities better?
Well, from everything I hear, and I didn't, of course, visit all the fair trade communities. We spent a lot of time in a small cooperative in southern Mexico, in Oaxaca. And what we saw there was really tremendous. Matt Warning, who has studied this subject much more extensively than I have, professor at the University of Puget Sound, really points out the enormous differences that fair trade does make in the lives of these coffee farmers who were so close to going out of business completely. Had that happened, what we would have seen is the destruction of much of the forest in that area, because these small farmers primarily farm organically. They primarily farm in areas which we would call shade grown. That is, there's a lot of biodiversity in the forests. When they are forced out of business, their role is often taken over by people who cut the forest down and grow maize or raise cattle for hamburgers or something like that in its place, and the ecology is affected very negatively. So I think we've seen both positive things for the people in those villages. In the village I went to, I mean, it was the first time after fair trade that the village even had a store, you know, where people could come and get anything. We just heard great stories about how much of a difference it had made to people's lives there. And it is protecting the environment as well.
Say more about how the people in the community you visited felt about the fair trade program.
Everything that I sensed was that they were very happy, generally speaking, with how it was working, that they talked about how, you know, many more of their kids now are able to go to school, how there were health programs in the communities that helped them, how they had the little extra income that made the difference between just a few minor things in people's lives, which we would totally take for granted, but which there people don't have. Even in the village we were at, electricity, for example. So I got the sense that people were very pleased with the changes that this had brought to their lives. This is not to say that fair trade or Forest Stewardship Council or any of these things are perfect, that they don't have blemishes, that there aren't sometimes difficulties, that things sometimes may get certified that shouldn't or not certified that should. I mean, there are no perfect programs out there, but I think on balance, this has made a tremendous positive difference in people's lives.
How widely is fair trade coffee being sold at this point in time?
Well, in the United States, from what I can tell, it still represents a very tiny portion of the coffee sold in the 1-2% range. But it's more and more available. And here in Seattle, I think it's very available for people who want it. We profile in the film the Cafe Ladro chain, which is a local chain now that expanded. I think it's probably got close to 10 cafes now around Seattle. A couple years ago, Jack Kelly, the owner of Cafe Ladro, made the decision to go fair trade, to buy only fair trade coffee, to buy only organic and only shade-grown coffee, what we call triple certified coffee. He saw what was happening to the poor farmers, and he said, you know, he was having trouble sleeping at night, that it was really hard to sleep well knowing that you were making your profits while off the backs of people who were going out of business, going broke and so forth, and that the fair trade thing helps his conscience a little, and he knows helps the farmers as well. So I think there are more and more of those kind of stories. Many of the universities in the Washington area have gone fair trade. That is, the coffee served at the universities is all fair trade now. Started with the University of Puget Sound, Western Washington. UW is now in the process of pushing toward fair trade, and I think they'll probably be there soon. At least I hope so. So it's more, people are more able to get it. We're not yet, though, where the Europeans are. This is the big difference. Much higher percentage of the coffee and other products consumed in Europe is fair trade. And in the United Kingdom, for example, there are something like 100 towns today that are called fair trade towns, where the whole village, it started with a little village called Garstang in northern England, where the whole village has made a commitment to fair trade, where all the businesses sell fair trade products and give people the choice of fair trade products. They don't only sell fair trade products, but they sell fair trade products, they advertise that, they explain to people what fair trade is about. The city council makes a preference for fair trade products, the town votes to call itself a fair trade town to make that commitment to supporting fair trade. I think Seattle could do that as a city. We could even be the first major city in the United States. We could follow the lead of Edinburgh in Scotland or Cardiff in Wales, large cities like that have become fair trade cities.
What was the impetus in the cities that are now all fair trade? How did that come about?
Well, it all started with a single individual named Bruce Crowther, who lives in this tiny village of Garstang, a beautiful little village in northern England. And he had learned about fair trade, and it just was trying to work around in his town to get people to buy more fair trade products, to do fair trade, and ended up really organizing the whole town and getting the town eventually to come to a public meeting, to get the council to actually vote to be a fair trade town, to get 90% of the businesses initially to carry fair trade products, to get all the churches and community groups on board. And once that was done, and they got a lot of publicity for that in England, then a lot of other cities wanted to follow suit. And the British Fair Trade Foundation established specific criteria by which towns could become fair trade towns.
What are some of the challenges in making fair trade coffee more widely available?
Well, I think there's always a push for the price is always an issue. You know, people are always in this global economy trying to go for the lowest prices and things like that. So I think that's an issue. I think some of the issues in fair trade that need to be solved and that have not yet been solved, and there are differences of opinion about these things. One of them is, should plantations be certified? The Transfair USA organization, which is the leading certifier in the United States of fair trade coffee, led by a very remarkable guy named Paul Rice, they believe that they should. Maybe not necessarily with exactly the same certification, but they believe that often the workers on plantations have it even harder and a rougher time than the small coffee producers. And that where plantations are unionized, where they take good care of the land, where they allow the workers' representation, where workers receive a decent salary in those countries, they believe that those should be certified too, and that would increase the amount. And then you just have to have more coffee companies out there, the bigger companies, not just now. We have hundreds of very little coffee companies that buy fair trade, but it makes a huge difference when, for example, Starbucks buys sizable amounts of fair trade coffee. And they're beginning to do that, and I salute them for that.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with award-winning filmmaker John DeGraff about his most recent documentary, Buyer Be Fair, The Promise of Product Certification. You also, in your film, took a look at Forest Stewardship Council certification. What criteria must be met for wood to be FSC certified?
Well, the Forest Stewardship Council was born out of a frustration over in the early 1990s over logging in tropical forests, over clear cutting in forests like on Vancouver Island, the whole Clackwat Sound dispute, all of these kind of things. People were looking for a solution, a way to bring together the forest industry with the environmentalists and with local people, with the loggers themselves, with the native communities, indigenous communities in this area, and to hammer out some kind of agreement about things that they could agree on about sustainability. So the FSC has 10 major points. I'll just give a few of them. Number one, wood has to be, it has to come from a sustainable management plan. And that plan really has to show that the forest is harvested and worked in such a way that it can be maintained over the long run. It needs to protect the rights of indigenous people to use the forest in their traditional ways. So in the film, we go to Sweden and show how the Sami people, used to be called Laps, in Lapland, are herding their reindeer through the forest in the ways that they used to. And they have a right to do that under FSC rules. FSC has other requirements. It's different in different places. For instance, it's the rules are a little more easy in a place that's flat with second growth timber, than they are in a place where we have old growth on steep slopes where the rules are very, very, very tight. FSC doesn't say that you can never cut an old growth tree, but it certainly minimizes that. It doesn't say that you can never have any kind of clear cutting, but it minimizes that. It doesn't say that you can never have any use of herbicides or chemicals, but that also is kept to a very small minimum. And if you do any of that, you really have to prove that it is sustainable and that it is positive for the ecology of the forest, not negative.
Could you expand, based on your film, some of the ways FSC certified wood has helped to improve the health of forests?
Well, where companies are certified and practice those, I mean, the best example we saw was the Collins Pine Company, which is a Portland-based company that has extensive timber holdings in Oregon, California, and Pennsylvania. And we visited their California forest lands, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, the forest just looks very healthy. Collins never has to plant any trees. They cut so carefully that the trees that are standing provide the seed base that makes for the trees that are coming after that. And they will occasionally cut an old-growth tree when it gets sick or diseased or something like that, but there are lots of old-growth trees all over Collins timberland. They leave all kinds of woody debris and old stumps and things standing for as habitat for the birds and for wildlife. They are restoring and revegetating the stream beds that were destroyed in the past either by logging practices or more often by cattle that had come into the forest. And so it's very, very impressive. And FSC measures their progress. One of the things about FSC is that you have to get better. That you don't have to be perfect to get certified. You have to meet a certain minimum list of requirements to be certified. And then after that, you get audited each year. They look at your work each year, and you have to improve. And it's pretty impressive what you see in these forests that are FSC managed.
How has FSC certified wood help improve communities?
Well, it certainly helps for indigenous communities and things. And I think FSC is concerned with the treatment of loggers themselves, with the whole idea that companies don't just dash out and leave everybody. They've got some rules about all kinds of things. Milling, for example, what they call a chain of custody rule, which covers the wood all the way from the forest to till it reaches the final consumer. And it has some things to say about how the milling is done, how the shipping is done, all those kind of things, and that workers in all these situations clearly have the right. They don't have to be unionized, but they have to have the right to. They have to have the opportunity to speak for themselves.
You said a few words about this earlier, but what are some of the reasons retailers choose to purchase Forest Stewardship Council certified wood and or fair trade coffee?
Well, I think there's two reasons. I mean, I think number one is that there are business people who have good consciences and see that this is a good thing to do. It doesn't cost a whole lot more. It costs a little more, but it doesn't cost a whole lot more. And they see that it's good for people and for the planet. And so they do that, and I applaud that. Sometimes it takes little pressure. Home Depot is very good about selling Forest Stewardship Council wood, and they do. They have it on their shelves, and they've made a commitment to certified wood. And I think that's a great thing. They did it after, though, the Rainforest Action Network and Greenpeace and a number of environmental organizations really pressured them. I mean, there was a lot of pressure because Home Depot was charged with buying tropical hardwoods from endangered forests, from impacting the Amazon, all of these kinds of things. And the tactics went as far as blockading stores. The Rainforest Action Network actually got the code to the loudspeakers in Home Depot stores around the country, and they would go in the stores. At one time, they did this in 100 stores at the same time, and they had people punching in the code for the loudspeaker and getting on the loudspeaker and saying, "Attention, all you Home Depot shoppers! Do you want to see where we sell a mahogany, tropical mahogany that helped destroy the Amazon? Join us in aisle 4." This kind of tactic, which resulted in arrests and various kinds of things, did lead to Home Depot saying, "Well, we want to be better stewards," and they're doing that. IKEA has been the big Swedish company has been very good, for instance, about buying FSC wood. And they say that the reason they do it is because they want to know that the wood they buy comes from sustainable forests, and they don't want to have to go out and do all that work themselves. They don't want to have to go look and check every forest themselves. And they know that if it has that FSC label, that that's been done. And so even if it costs them a little more, in the long run, it saves them, and it means that they're taking better care of the forest. So it's a great business thing. That's what IKEA says.
In the process of producing your film, how aware did you find consumers to be of fair trade or FSC certified products?
Well, in the U.S., not aware at all. We interviewed people in Home Depot store, and not a single customer we talked to had any clue what Forest Stewardship Council stood for, what certified wood was about. By contrast, we went to a home improvement store, kind of a Home Depot of the Netherlands called Gamma, store outside Amsterdam, and virtually everyone we talked to in that store knew exactly what FSC was, why they would buy it, how it helped the environment. And that was because Holland had a campaign of PSAs on television that let people know about what was happening to the forest and what FSC does. I think the UK is probably the country that's most well-informed, both about fair trade and they buy the most FSC timber. There's just a lot of push. We need to do more educating in the United States, and we hope the film will help to make that possible.
What are some other products besides coffee and forests that have been certified or labeled as fair trade?
Oh, for fair trade, lots of things. You can find chocolates that are fair trade. You can find teas that are fair trade. The Wild Oats supermarket chain and other stores sell bananas and mangoes and tropical fruits that are fair trade. You can find art and craft products and things that are fair trade. It's definitely growing. More and more of these kinds of things all the time. You have to be a little careful because it really needs to have that fair trade certification, that label that comes from Transfair USA here in the U.S. There are companies that may call their coffee fairly traded or something like that, but if it doesn't have that Transfair label, you can't be sure that it's fair trade.
Do you think certification can also be beneficial for additional products?
Oh, I think ultimately it could be beneficial for practically everything we buy. I mean, I think it's important for us to know as shoppers that the things we buy aren't harming people or the planet. Now, there's a problem with that, and that problem, of course, is that most of us don't have enough time to read all those labels and all that information. We're looking at the nutrition. We're looking at this. We're looking at that. So the Dutch, for example, say that it's really the responsibility of corporations to do this. They say that corporations really need to make, and municipalities and governments need to make the commitment to buying the fair trade and the FSC products because they're buying in bulk and they know they understand where the products come from and that they really need to make that commitment to do the right thing. It doesn't just have to depend strictly on the consumer and consumer choice.
Having produced the film, what is your current view as to how beneficial certification is as a way of both improving the environment and communities in the developing world?
Well, I think it's a great step in the right direction. I mean, as I said, I didn't go everywhere. I wasn't able to see everything, but what I saw was very impressive, and I think that it's a huge step in the right direction. I mean, it's that middle ground, in a sense, between the folks who think that, free trade should be unrestricted, unlimited, globalization is great, let's just do everything and race to the bottom if we want to make the prices the lowest, I mean, what you might call the Walmart factor or something like that, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, those folks who say, no globalization, shut it down, we're not going to have we're not going to have the trade. That's not going to happen. I mean, we are globalizing, and we need to find ways to make globalization more fair and more sustainable.
What connection, if any, do you see between product certification and some of your other interests, such as overconsumption, simplicity, and the Take Back Your Time movement?
Well, it all goes together. I mean, it's really all about being conscious about what we do with our lives and what we do with our spending. And I encourage that we need to be conscious consumers, both in the sense of consuming less and having less impact on the planet. I mean, where we can, simplifying our lives and having life not revolve so much around commodities and around things that we buy. But where it is about things that we buy, and if we're going to drink coffee, if we're going to do those things, then I think we should try to make the effort to buy the stuff that is giving the best deal to workers and to the environment. And so I think all of these things are connected. They're really about our lifestyle and what we want to leave for future generations and what we want to do as the richest people on the planet, what our obligations are in terms of equity and fairness to the billions of people on this planet who have very, very little.
Where has your film been shown so far?
It premiered at a film festival called the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival in Nevada City, California. It's been shown at the University of Puget Sound to a very big audience, been shown at Traditions, a cafe in Olympia, a fair trade cafe in Olympia. It will be shown at the opening night film of the Washington, D.C. Environmental Film Festival in March. It'll be shown as part of the Earth Week events at the University of Washington. It'll be shown as part of the Environmental Law Conference about 2 weeks from now in Eugene, Oregon. So, and many, many other places. We're hoping that at least by fall it will be shown nationally on public television.
What has been the reaction to your film, Buyer Be Fair, so far?
It's been very, very positive. From the people who have seen it, we've had an almost universal positive reaction. There are some people, I would call them the purists in the fair trade movement, who believe that the fair trade movement is getting a little bit too broad, that it's not centered just on those companies that are 100% fair trade. Those people think it should be. So they have a little bit of problem with the perspective of the film. But overall, I think the response has been great. Out of 80 films at the film festival in California, the film goers voted it number 4, you know, there. So we were very pleased about that. And it'll also be at the Hazel Wolf Environmental Film Festival in Leavenworth in March. It'll be on Channel 9. That's March the 30th at 9 o'clock. It'll be on KCTS. And so lots of opportunities. We'll be showing it March 10th at 7 p.m. at the Mountaineers as part of the Sustainability Conference, which I know you're aware of.
What do you plan next as far as filmmaking?
Well, I'm working on a new project. It's called the Motherhood Manifesto, and it's connected with a book called The Motherhood Manifesto, co-written by Joan Blades, the co-founder of MoveOn.org, and Kristen Rao Finkbeiner, who's from Kirkland here, a great writer. And it's really about policies for working families, things like having paid family leave and good public child care and free health care for children and adequate minimum living wages for poor families. It will be coming out in June, and it will be used by groups like Move On and unions and other things in house parties and other things in order to promote in the 2006 elections some kinds of real, truly, I would say, family-friendly public policy.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
One message is that, you know, no one does a film by themselves, and huge credit in making this film possible is due to David Fox, who did wonderful filming and editing. Also Diana Wilmar and Hanna Jindrova, my co-producer, and quite a number of other people who were involved in the production. I don't want to take the credit for their work. Secondly, I think these things are all connected. I think that we have a responsibility to do what we can to make a better world. And I was very inspired by the people who have chosen to build Fair Trade and FSC. FSC really remarkable because, you know, the whole fact that they could bring together such competing forces and sit them down over 10 years in the same rooms, you know, time and time again and hammer out these things, I think it's remarkable. So I think there's a lot of optimism out there. We hear all the bad news. We hear what's, you know, I mean, the world seems to be falling apart, and particularly our country seems to be falling apart, something I'm not at all happy about the direction of our country. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of positive things we need to know about that are going on in the world.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We have just been speaking with award-winning filmmaker John DeGraff. John's new documentary, Buyer Be Fair, The Promise of Product Certification, which he co-produced with Hanna Jindrova, will be shown Friday evening, March 10th, 7 p.m., as part of the Northwest Sustainability Conference at the Mountaineers, 303rd Avenue West in Seattle. This showing of Buyer Be Fair is open to the public free and includes a reception, forum, and discussion with John. Also, Buyer Be Fair will air on public television, KCTS-TV, at 9 p.m. March 30th. Information about the Northwest Sustainability Conference on March 10th and 11th can be found at www.nweec.org. Again, that's nweec.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week.